Hello, and welcome to Screaming in the Cloud with your host, cloud economist Corey Quinn. This weekly show features conversations with people doing interesting work in the world of cloud, thoughtful commentary on the state of the technical world, and ridiculous titles for which Corey refuses to apologize. This is Screaming in the Cloud.
This episode of Screaming in the Cloud has been sponsored by Manifold. Manifold powers marketplace infrastructure that connects millions of developers to the best APIs, tools, and services in the fastest-growing communities, and also Kubernetes. They offer a complete toolkit that allows you to deliver your API-first product to millions of developers. Check them out at manifold.co. Again, that's manifold.co.
Welcome to Screaming in the Cloud. I'm Corey Quinn. I'm joined this week by Paul Johnston. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hello. Very nice to be here.
So once upon a time, you were an interim CTO, a CTO and strategist, and you were focused very heavily on serverless. In fact, when I first met you, you were a senior developer advocate at AWS for serverless.
Yep, that's correct. It was an exciting time at AWS, and there were only two of us at the time, myself and Chris Munns. Yeah, it was an awful lot to do. Lambda was a little bit younger back then. There were an awful lot of companies to get around, an awful lot of organizations to talk to, and I was based in EMEA, Chris was based in North America. So yeah, it was a fascinating time to be around AWS back then.
It certainly seems so. Lately, though, it seems that you haven't been speaking nearly as much about serverless as you have about climate change. And what makes you interesting is that I can find any number of random yahoos to come on this show and talk about serverless in a variety of different tones of voice. But no one in our space seems to be talking in any meaningful way about climate change except for you. And based on conversations that we've had, I know you to be a thoughtful, sincere person, and you're not a ridiculous crank. So let's talk this half hour about climate change and how it impacts cloud computing.
Well, thank you very much for the saying I'm not a crank. I hope I'm not. So it would be a great thing to talk about, I think.
About climate change or being a crank?
About climate change. Let's talk about that. Hopefully I'll come out a lot better at the end of it and not a crank.
So you've given a presentation on this. You've written on Medium, which is thusly named because it is neither rare nor well done. And you wrote a white paper on energy usage in data centers contrasted between the large providers. Mm-hmm. How are we doing from a climate change point of view in the cloud computing industry?
So the cloud computing industry is it's not doing too brilliantly, although there are some real bright spots and some real kind of low spots. The industry itself is, if you look at the whole data center industry, and there are different opinions on this, and it's difficult to look at, but the whole industry appears to be actually a pretty bad polluter in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. So some will say it's below 1%, others will say it's 3, 4, 5%. I take a roughly middle view of about 2% of greenhouse gas emissions are worldwide, this is, are down to data centers. Now, if you think about the fact that actually we're all streaming Netflix and we've got all of these things stored in the cloud and we've got all of this storage and we're using cloud providers, there's 2% of, you know, 1/50th of the greenhouse gas emissions that are going on in the world are basically down to us using computers, us techies. And then you kind of look at where the growth is in the market, and the growth is in cloud computing sector. It's, yes, we've still got all of these corporate data centers, but they are all beginning to move, and over time will move and shift to cloud computing. So the fact is that we've got to look at cloud computing, and we've got to look at cloud computing as, is it a good example of, is it good at looking after its resources and looking at whether or not it's emitting well or badly, or what's it doing? Is it offsetting? Is it doing all of these things? So myself and Anne Curry created a white paper last year. We did a little bit of research and we took the top six cloud providers, and we looked at them and we basically said, who's doing well, who's doing badly, what are they doing and how are they doing it? And we effectively came up with, and just take the top three because it's the easiest, the top three of AWS and Microsoft, Azure and Google. And Google are the exemplar. They are doing really well. If you have a look at their sustainability page on Google Cloud, they try to offset all of their usage with renewable energy, and they do a really good job of it. It's not perfect. So if you see their China usage, you'll find that they are struggling to find renewable resources to offset, but they do as much as they possibly can and offset in other areas of the world to do that. But they do a very good job, and they offset 100% of their usage as much as possibly can with local renewable resources, but otherwise by renewable energy credits. Microsoft are, I think, if I remember rightly, over 50% now, I think over 60% possibly, and then buying renewable energy credits for the rest. But Amazon, so AWS, is the one that we're all concerned by. And there at the moment, they are stating 50%, and they're not actually saying what they are now. They said that at the beginning of 2018, and they've grown since then. We don't know what their electricity usage is now. They don't release numbers. So we're not getting updated information, and we're reaching the point where we're constantly asking, you know, let's have some updated information, let's have some updated information, and they're not giving it to us. But they have four regions, which are Oregon, Montreal, Ireland, and Frankfurt, and those regions are 100% sustainable. So if you can put workloads that are non-production or not needed all the time, then put them in there and you're 100% sustainable. You can be green and still use the cloud and still use AWS. But otherwise, you know, US East 1 is basically... it's just don't use it if you can at all avoid it for environmental reasons, if nothing else.
There have been many reasons not to use that particular region, but this is the first time I've heard this one.
There are very, very many. And it's basically a very simple thing to consider. You know, we've looked at things like machine learning workloads. You could move those out. You don't need to run those in US East 1. You can move them anywhere. Just... all of these kinds of things, we just automatically use US East 1. And while I used to work for AWS, and there are a lot of people there that I really, you know, I have a lot of fondness for, and I remember my time, a lot of my times there well, you know, it's still a big company. It's got a lot of money. It could buy some renewable energy credits to at least offset to 100% and get there, and then start investing in the renewable infrastructure. It could do these things and actually make a big difference in the world. But it appears to not be doing that, and we're not entirely certain why.
So other than, people who could think further ahead than next quarter, there are a number of people who are clamoring about climate change across the spectrum. Mm-hmm. Why don't we see that in tech? Or if we do, we have prominent people in tech who are sounding the alarm on this, but they're not talking about cloud computing. Why?
I'm not sure. I think we've got a bit of a problem within technology for a number of reasons, but I think we see technology as not really a part of the problem. So one of the things that I found looking into this is that technologists don't really see technology as a whole as creating a carbon footprint. So one of the CTOs that I've talked to recently said to me, I don't know why you're talking about all of this stuff. My company doesn't have a very big carbon footprint. And this was a company that has a huge data center. And I kind of was looking at him and just kind of trying to understand how he didn't see the correlation between the amount of electricity he uses in his data center and the power stations that create that electricity. And it's because in our world, and there are a lot of conversations that go along with this, and I'm not trying to agree with any political side, but in our world, because we have created this globalized world, we've actually abstracted away the carbon and abstracted away the emissions so far away from, you know, the turning on of the light or the turning on of the computer and the use of our electricity, to the point where we don't see the impacts. And that's especially true for the culture that we live in. So when you talk about the climate impacts, there's a lot of, this is true for technology, but it's true for the culture that we live in terms of the West. And so when you talk to climate activists, what they'll talk about is the global South and the global North, because actually the impacts of climate change are being felt in the global South, and they are being felt now just because of the 1.1 degrees we've already had of warming, whereas the global North doesn't feel those changes quite so much. Even though we've had a few hurricanes and they've been really bad, we don't feel them, especially in the UK and North America. We haven't felt them anywhere near as badly as somewhere like India or Africa has felt them in terms of droughts or in terms of extreme weather events. So we've got this because it isn't my problem. It hasn't affected me. And because I don't see the problems that are coming down the road, and everything's abstracted away and all these things don't really matter. I think we have a problem in tech in terms of taking responsibility, and in terms of how do you say, I'm responsible for something, and taking that responsibility forward. And I think we've really got this problem with convenience and responsibility there.
Do you think that this sort of hits on the entire idea, I guess, we'll go back to serverless for a minute, mm-hmm. of there are servers there, but I don't have to think about them or care about them. If we take a look at cloud computing, there are things that I obviously have to care about. We can sort of pervert the shared responsibility model as an example here. I don't have to care, for example, about what hard drive vendor AWS uses. That is so far below the level of things I need to care about. It feels deceptively compelling to be able to say, I don't care where they buy their power because I shouldn't need to. It feels like going down that path is the only realistic stance someone can take, because they're not empowered to directly change it by most reasonable perspectives that I've heard. And they're trying to solve business problems that don't directly align. This has been something that gets a surprising amount of pass. And I don't think it's accurate, but I suspect that might be where that attitude comes from.
Yeah, and I think I would agree. I think, you know, since the cloud computing, the convenience of being able to click a button or even just send an API call and you have this huge amount of computing power at your fingertips is a world away from having to provision or even buy servers and then provision them and, you know, set them up and make sure you've bought your electricity, and then you set up things called power purchase agreements. You know, you have to buy power from a power company. You know, it's so far removed from all of that. You abstract all that complexity and you have this convenient service that gives you all this compute power. It's so far removed. And then I can completely understand how a technologist would feel disempowered in that scenario to say to someone like AWS, oh yeah, you need to change your power usage. You need to change the way you do power. You need to change the way you need think about your electricity. And one of the CTOs I spoke to about this recently said, well, why don't we just get everyone to move to Google? And I said, well, how's that going to work? One company moving to Google is not going to make one, an AWS, or, you know, if we're talking about Oracle, for example. Let's not just demonize AWS here. I'm not trying to do that. I'm just using them very much as an example. Oracle's only at 33%, for example, in terms of renewable energy usage. You can't just say, well, one company moving to Google, which is the gold standard here. You can't just say, let's move everyone to there, because one company moving will make no difference. We've got to have awareness across the organizations who are using cloud, and then get them to combine and get the industry to understand itself. And this is what activism is. It's not activism in this scenario is not about getting everyone to vote with their feet and move away. It's about actually getting the industry to realize its responsibilities and start to have the conversation and create the conversation. And I think the industry should be having the conversation that says, right, I think we need to do something about this. I think our responsibility is to everybody and to the world. And, you know, this industry is huge. It's got a huge amount of money involved. And actually, we should care about the fact that our cloud provider is providing all this convenience, but it's not convenience without a cost. And that cost shouldn't be at the expense of, you know, our children's future. And it shouldn't be at the expense of, in, you know, cities in India in 2050 being unlivable. I mean, essentially, that's what we're talking about, is partly, and while I know that there are people going, well, that's not me using cloud computers, not going to do that. I understand that one person doing one thing isn't going to change it. This is about changing perceptions across an industry.
The other challenge is that people have a sense of immediacy, where I wind up talking to people who are big in the cryptocurrency space, and they have the temerity to yell at people who travel too much of, well, you understand that jetliners have a massive environmental impact. Yeah, what do you think mining your Dunning-Krugerrands is causing to the environment? It's one of those incredibly wasteful things that almost feels like it's too surreal to exist, but it does.
Yeah, and I think the problem is that, you look at the Bitcoin specifically, and Bitcoin and Ethereum have proof of work, and proof of work is essentially a massive lottery that everyone takes part in. And if you take part in the lottery, you use compute power to try and guess a number to win some Bitcoin or Ethereum. That's essentially what it is. And everyone joins in this lottery and they win some money at the end of the day. And then 10 minutes later, they get to do it again. Huge amount of electricity to win some Bitcoin. And the research is showing, I think I did it recently. The research showed something like driving a car 800 miles is the same as one Bitcoin transaction. And that in terms of global emissions. And so when you start talking about it in those terms, you start to really get scared about, is this really worth it? And I think we have a real problem in terms of when we start to point fingers with somebody's individual behavior. An individual's behavior is actually really not that important in the grand scheme of things. But when we gang together, when we do something together as an industry, we will make a difference. And things like basically saying proof of work is a terrible thing to do, we should not be doing that. And saying, yes, our cloud computing should be 100% offset. And we should be investing in data centers that are completely renewably powered, and we should be investing in battery technologies, proper battery technologies. We should be creating data centers such that we are not using on-demand compute, not creating servers that are over-provisioned and underutilized. We should be creating technologies like this as an industry, stating that our aim is not to waste the electricity that we're given. But actually, we don't do that. We just create technology in the way that we create technology, because effectively it's free. And as an individual's choice, I have cut down on the amount of travel. I certainly don't fly in Europe anywhere near as much as I used to. I try to use the train in Europe. Transatlantic travel is very, very difficult, as Greta Thunberg has shown. And so you usually just have to use a plane for that point. So you learn to offset. So you learn to use offsetting various offsetting companies, and there's a gold standard for offsetting which you can use. So I think when the finger is pointed, I think you just have to turn around and go, well, what else are you doing? I'm doing all of these other things. What else are you doing? And yes, no one person's life is ever going to be completely free of all of these problems, because our countries and our systems of government and our ways of life, our globalization is so full of sunk carbon, for want of a better phrase, that we can't get away from, it's virtually impossible to get away from having a carbon footprint that isn't sustainable for the long term. So unless we change our ways of looking at life and the universe and everything, then I don't think we're going to do anything. There was a talk yesterday that I went to where someone said, effectively, unless governments and a few very big companies change, then the only other way of doing this is to is to get the entire world to go to put solar panels on their roofs and to stop driving cars and to stop flying and to effectively all go vegan. That's pretty much what we've got to do, and we've got to do it in the next 5 to 10 years. And I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen. So we've got this problem where we need to fix it, and we don't have the tools to do it. So when someone points the finger, I think we have to say, well, do something, but don't do nothing. I think that's the best way of looking at it.
Migrating between regions, let alone between different cloud computing providers, is a massive undertaking for almost any environment that is more than trivial to scale. Mm-hmm. So it almost feels like that is far less likely to happen than enough people shaming Amazon into stepping up on the climate front.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I've seen data centers that are basically stuck in buildings that are never going to get moved, or at least because they've been there 20 years. And the person who's there is basically, there's only one person in the company that really knows how it works. And the cost of moving, it would be an absolute nightmare, but they're in production. And I can imagine there are cloud environments now that have been sitting on EC2 instances, or, you know, moved between EC2 instances and various different things that have been there, what, 10 years now? That people can't move because they don't really understand how they work. And I can imagine that all of these scenarios for the non-trivial things that we're talking about, we can't just go, oh, just move. I'll just do this. It's too simplistic. We've got complex technology. And I think building a movement around this, I think, is the best way of going forwards.
So what can people listening do?
So we've got a number of different things. But the I think probably the easiest thing is to go and learn. Go and have a look at what's out there. Go and read some blog posts. Go and follow some climate scientists. And I think before you do it, and I think this is especially true in America, I think leave your preconceptions at the door. I think we have the same in the UK. I think it's all around the world. If you go and read the IPCC report from last year, which was the special report on global warming to 1.5 degrees and above, I think you'll find that that was signed off by every nation of the world. It's not a political report. It's a report that basically gives you the information. Go and read that. Learn something. Don't listen to the politicians who are using words that are mired in alternative meanings. Go and figure out what those words are basically hiding. And then go and do the reading for yourself. I've got a Medium post on that I wrote a few days ago, actually, which was about stop being a techie and start being a human. And I think the tech world has a tendency to hear something like this, realize that there's a problem, and then go, right, how do I fix this? What's the solution? How can I build a website, an app? That will be the thing I need to go and do. And I would just caution against that, simply because the problem is so huge and complex that that's not really going to solve anything. You might solve one problem, but then there are going to be 100 other problems out there. So I would suggest probably going and sitting and listening to whoever your nearest climate activism groups are, so your 350.orgs or your whoever they are within your group, so with Greenpeace or Extinction Rebellion or I think it's the Sunrise Movement and all of these organizations, whoever it is, and just listen. You don't necessarily have to agree with them, and just listen. And there are a huge number of amazing climate people, and there's a climate Twitter that is just full of amazing content. Just go and start to absorb this content, read it, take it on board, and you will start to find that there is an undercurrent of hope that we can do something incredible. But it's kind of an organizational start at present. We're not at the point of really doing anything. We are gathering. And I think we're in a gathering phase at the moment. But I would just caution against too much doing and not enough thinking and waiting and listening. And I know that for techie people, that's quite a difficult thing to hear, because we all want to just build something and, you know, try and 10x it and get some funding. But I don't think that's what the world needs right now. I think the world needs people to start spreading messages and talking. And I think that's a very different thing to the way that we're used to doing the world now.
This is usually where we try to have something uplifting and, oh, here's how it's all going to be okay. And I feel like I'm grasping a little bit to find that narrative.
I know. And okay, this, so let's put it this way. The tech industry is full of people with money, with huge brains, and with a huge amount of love for the world that we live in. We have the opportunity to use those skills and the skill sets of running, building businesses, of taking out, of building organizations and communication and technology, and taking those skills and putting them to use in the right ways and in the right places. And so I think there is the scope for turning what is often the industry that people turn around and laugh at and see an awful lot of bad things. And, you know, the disaster capitalists, that effectively they a lot of people look at tech and see an awful lot of money and not a lot of goodwill. And I think we've got an opportunity to say, actually, there's an awful lot of good people in tech. There's an awful lot of good things that could be done. And I know that it feels like there's not a lot of hope, but there is an awful lot of good stuff out there. So, for example, if you've never come across Project Drawdown, so one of the things that we need to do to essentially turn back the clock on climate change is we need to stop emitting carbon. But we don't just need to stop emitting carbon, we need to also be taking carbon out of the atmosphere, so carbon capture and storage. And we need to be doing, we need to be reducing the amount of carbon that's coming out of various different other places around the world. And so, for example, someone did a plan for doing this, and it's called Project Drawdown, and it's got a whole list of things that would help in the climate change movement. And most people would think, well, it's basically decarbonizing the grid, so it's clean, and making everyone eat, you know, vegetarian and vegan. And it's like, actually, it isn't. There are things on there like educating women in Africa and Asia, and there's things in there around better chemicals in air conditioning units, and there's things around. It's a completely different set of skills and technologies and understandings. It's also the wind farms, and it's also the batteries, and it's also the things that are obvious. But there are things in there that a tech mind and a set of tech companies could pick up and go, actually, I can do something around that. I could do that. I could build something. I could create something in that space. It's not going to be your venture capital funded, you know, 100 billion unicorn company necessarily, but it might be one of the bricks in the wall that helps us do something about climate change in the world. And you may get to be, you know, you may get to have a more fulfilling life than helping one of the big companies make, you know, another 100 million off people playing a game on an app on a mobile phone that they bought for $1,000 in an Apple store. You know, we can do better with this industry. I have a huge amount of hope that this industry has attracted all the clever people. Maybe all the clever people can go and do something to fix the world we're in now. I have hope.
I guess that is the uplifting narrative that we look for in this. I'll include links in the show notes of the article that you wound up writing, the white paper as well. Where can people go to learn more about you?
So I'm on Twitter at Paul D. Johnston, and on Medium at Paul D. Johnston. And yeah, just come and find me there. Ping me a message if you want to know more. And there is also the climateaction.tech Slack group, which is well worth getting involved. And there's an awful lot of tech people on there who are trying to figure out how to use their tech skills for this kind of thing, for climate change and for good. So I'll be on there as well. Come and find me.
Excellent. And of course, you are one of the organizers slash founders of Serverless Days.
Yeah, I am. And if you want to get involved in doing the serverless thing, which I still enjoy doing, then serverlessdays.io. There's going to be one somewhere near you, I'm pretty sure. So go and have a look. And if you want to become an organizer, get involved and get in touch via the website as well. While we've talked about climate change, serverless is still a big thing. Written a lot of Medium posts on that as well, but we haven't talked about that at all.
Excellent. Thank you once again for taking time out of your evening to chat with us about this.
Thank you.
And thank you for that uplifting story.
I've really enjoyed it. Thank you for allowing me to speak and to have a bit of time to talk about it.
Paul Johnston, interim CTO and currently working on something stealth mode and not a crank. I'm Corey Quinn. This is Screaming in the Cloud.
This has been this week's episode of Screaming in the Cloud. You can also find more Corey at screaminginthecloud.com or wherever fine snark is sold.
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.